in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving higher, time and time again. Through the years, you'll find us here. Moving higher.
Welcome to Moving Iron Podcast Markets with Sean Hackett. And Sean is with Hackett Financial Advisors in Boca Raton, Florida, and he is a weekly guest here on Moving Iron Podcast and is gracious enough to come on here and talk about what's going on in the market. So, Sean, how you doing, man? How things been?
Things are good. Things are good, real good. I can't complain at all. We got some lively markets today. So.
Well, good. I'm over here in Ukraine, so I haven't had a chance to check the markets and see what's been going on over there. Been traveling back around and trying to hit the proper windows and during hours of operation in the U.S. So it's about a 9-hour difference. So it's sometimes that makes it a little cool. But let's start with that and let's talk about what's happening in the market right now. Because it is right now in Ukraine, it's about 9 o'clock. So it's what, 2 o'clock? 2 o'clock in the afternoon of your local time?
Correct.
Right, so let's talk about what's going on in the markets right now. And we're about an hour from the close. So what's happening there?
Well, I mean, right now, you know, we have, you know, corn up about 7 or 8, wheat's up about 13, and which really set off the grain markets. You know, cotton's up over $1, hogs over $1. Trump tweeted this morning that he's optimistic about a trade deal and that they offered to not only not have on Sunday, but also roll back some of the prior tariffs by 50%. So that's what came out this morning. And the minute that came out, markets just jolted ahead, and they've been kind of strong all day long. So whether that's all believable or not, we'll find out.
Yeah, exactly.
The market
been there before. Yeah.
Been there before, but that's got excited today. So.
Right on. All right, so let's talk about cotton a little bit here. So we're starting to see some of the cotton over the last couple of months have started to show a little bit of a fizzle. You know, they've kind of hit a little more volatility upwards and downwards, but there's big swings to the downward side, and then they rebound a little bit and come back down the downward side a little bit. It looks like China has stockpiles that are being auctioned off each day and they're kind of opening that floodgate up on some cotton that they've got stored up. So let's talk about that cotton market a little bit, what you see happening there.
Well, you know, cotton continued to be moved around by, is this deal going to get done or not, which we know. We did run up a lot. I mean, we were down at 55 cents. We rallied up to 65 cents, and that was big resistance. And so the market kind of is pausing and saying, you know, do we need to go higher? And I think it's been happy to kind of sit here and pause and take a breather until it can better ascertain, A, what's going on with monetary policy, B, what's actually going on with the global economy, and C, is this trade deal going to get done? And if so, how much buying will the Chinese be in cotton? And so I think that's why the market's paused, because it's just, for now, we've done enough. We're willing to wait and watch these other factors for a while until we get clear direction. So.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about the hogs that you brought up here earlier. The hogs have kind of made a rebound. Plus, what you mean? You know, we've talked about AFS on here or ASF many times on this podcast about what the impact it's had on the Chinese herd and what they're doing overnight. And it looks like we're starting to see some of that residual effect of what we saw, maybe similar to kind of that beginning of their buying habits in Brazil, when China came to the table in there. So I guess talk about that a little bit and what you see happening there.
Well, remember, they lowered and or removed most of the tariffs on U.S. hogs just recently. So, you know, we've talked about this in the past, that they will buy what they need for sure, no matter what the trade deal is. You know they need pork. We know pork is the cheapest in the world right now by a lot. So they're buying a lot. And the good news for U.S. producers is that first quarter and the second quarter, we'll see production in the U.S. fall markedly. And so this wall of supply that's been keeping the market, keeping the governor on this market, keeping breaking out, will be removed as it moves into January. And if this demand that we've been seeing continues, this should really, really set this market up for, we think, a pretty big sizable move, at least going back, we think, testing that 90-cent area, that we did earlier in the year. So we're pretty excited that we're nearing the end of the U.S. oversupply situation. We're moving into, a U.S. supply shortage based upon current export demand. Don't forget, NAFTA was agreed to a couple of days ago, so that's done, and it looks like the Mexicans are going to be increasing their exports of pork as well. So pretty good news heading into a very low, a much lower supply part of the season in the first half. So.
Yeah. All right. So per your comments earlier, December 15th is knocking on the door here, and that is another line in the sand where the U.S. has an opportunity to raise, or an opportunity, I guess, but has stated they're going to raise tariffs on China doesn't come to the table, things squared away. You got to think a little bit here. Trump's looks like he's supposed to be meeting with some of his advisors today to talk about that December 15th deadline. It kind of feels like this might be one of those chances for them to maybe do some kind of a act of goodwill or something like that, where they might forego that. Kind of feel like there's some opportunity there to maybe extend the olive branch of sorts.
Look, I think we're finally at the point where Trump's looking at the calendar. He's looking at the election. He's looking at how to best proceed. And I think what he's decided to do, we'll know this for sure over the weekend, but what I think he's decided to do is say, right now, cutting any deal or any kind of a deal is better than no deal. And he can say that the Democrats had the control for 8 years as president in Congress, and for 8 years they did nothing. And I went in here, I tried to do something. I got an initial deal done, phase one. If you vote for me again, I'll finish the job. I think that's his pitch that he wants to have going into the elections.
Right.
So he can say that. And it looks to me from what came out today in the press, directly from them, that his advisors offered this olive branch. We're not going to raise these tariffs on Sunday, and we'll cut their prior tariffs by 50%. If you kind of do a few of the things that we want here in terms of increasing your ag purchases, we're willing to do that. So to me, that is as big an olive branch as you're going to get. And it says to me, Trump's ready for now to do a deal and kind of worry about this again after he gets elected, if he gets elected again. So.
Right. That'll be an easy thing for him to, like you just said, and during the debates and everything else leading up to up to November of 2020, where he can say, look, I told you I was going to go to bat for the U.S. and make some things happen with the Chinese, and look where we're at now, and think of what's going to be like the next 4 years if we get a chance to keep moving the same forward. There's a good possibility that you can see something like that. I mean, that's kind of been my thought process, I guess, for lack of a better term, during this whole thing, is that as the elections grew closer, that you would see some more level of cooperation or less bullheadedness or more apt to deal, or however you want to put it, from Trump and his advisors.
And look, if you look at the NAFTA rework, he actually gave the Democrats a lot of what they wanted, because I also think he wants to show that I'm going to fix this. I did it. I got something going with China. There's more to come. But he knows, the economy, the U.S. economy is fragile. He can't do any more tax cuts. Infrastructure spending is dead. So how can I stimulate the U.S. economy enough so that it looks good come the summer and the fall when everyone's going to the voting box? And I think improved trade would certainly be an important tailwind that could help him, keep things going just long enough to get him back in. And so I really, for the first time, like you said before correctly, Casey, this may actually be the time where what they're actually saying is true.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. That'd be something, wouldn't it? All right, so let's bounce over here and take a look at this. One thing that I've been watching fairly closely here of late and keeping some good notes on it is the prices. And this is about the fourth week in a row where you've seen a steady decline in the overall choice cuts out there that are on cold storage. So I guess, but on the same side, you know, we've watched the actual cattle price go up and there and kind of level off a little bit and kind of go back and forth a little bit. But we've seen a growth in what the price looks like. But I've been watching this box beef price out here and especially on the choice cuts, and there has been some strong downward movement on that. I guess talk about that a little bit there.
Well, you know, there's a lot of seasonality to beef demand. You know, we know that there's a seasonal weak period here in December. As you get holiday demand behind you, you're going to kind of reach this air pocket where domestic consumption falls off a little bit. I mean, it's just natural to see that. And so we're in this seasonal weak period of time. The market has stalled. We are seeing some prices backing off. And so it's a time for the market to kind of back and fill and reassess. However, as we move into the first quarter, U.S. beef production is going to fall off significantly at a time where it appears that China purchases, Japanese purchases of U.S. beef are going to be increasing. And the other big factor we're really watching is a lot of people may not know is that we import a lot of beef from Australia and New Zealand. More of the kind of hamburger meat kind of cuts. And what we know what's going on in Australia is that after a third year of a drought, they've basically liquidated everything they can. And it looks like they're going to have to stop. And it looks like some rains are coming, which means their supplies that are available to the U.S. are going to completely dry up, which takes a huge supply factor that usually comes into the U.S. in the first half off the table. So while this pause is expected, it's understandable, it's seasonal, but we don't believe it's terminal. We're just a short-term pause before we kind of fire things up again and get the supply-demand back out of balance again. So we think it could be a soft market, sideways market, maybe into the first of the year, and then we think things can fire up again as we do one more surge highs, you know, into the late first quarter, into the early part of the second quarter. So.
It's kind of carrying the overall grain markets as we go throughout the day here, and I would be remiss if I didn't actually bring up wheat here since I'm in Ukraine this week, producing countries in the Black Sea region for sure, if not in the top five in the whole world here. So let's talk about the wheat market a little bit, what you see happening there. That has been one of those crops that we've watched kind of go back year long. It's been a leader in the marketplace. It's been a follower in the marketplace. It's been a trendsetter at the same time. So wheat's kind of been all over the board. What do you see happening with the wheat market right now? A lot of things happening out there, whether it's, like you said, the Australian drought from there, the wet planting season we've seen in Eastern or Western Europe, and also we have had some dryness over here in Ukraine and the Black Sea region as well. So talk about wheat right now and what are some opportunities for some growth there.
Well, the biggest thing that we see is that Ukraine and Russian wheat exports are falling substantially over the last 45 to 60 days. And, Russia has become the dominant exporter, has become the dominant exporter over the last several years. And there, the wheat prices domestically in Russia are up over 16%, over the last month and a half, because they're just not exporting what they're supposed to be or what the market has been accustomed to.
Right.
So if they're not getting it from them, Australia is certainly not going to have anything to give them. It's going to be the U.S. that's going to start getting more and more business. So we have been getting more and more business. Our exports, one of the few bright spots, Casey, for grain exports consistently throughout the back half of the year has been strong U.S. wheat exports. And so we're pretty optimistic that that is going to continue to be a good driver here. And certainly all the things you mentioned with the start to the winter wheat crop in the U.S. over in Europe. As we come out of dormancy in the spring, should weather turn continue to be adverse, we could really be looking at something pretty interesting, because when we look at stocks to usage ex-China for wheat, we're at the tightest stocks to usage ex-China since 2012. We really, unless China decides they want to sell a bunch of wheat to the rest of the world, and assuming the rest of the world wants the low quality wheat that they have, we really can't have any more hiccups here. We really have to have something good go on with some big countries that produce a lot of wheat, or else it could get really exciting this spring. And so we think that's going to be a pretty persistent driver here of U.S. prices going forward, especially if the dollar continues to weaken as it looks like that it has. It will continue to do so.
Yeah, I've been doing this podcast with you and listening to what you have to say, wheat is one of those things where I have the most optimism of any crop that we grow in the U.S. It just feels like there's a great opportunity over the next coming year, just based on weather patterns, what we see happening in some key growing areas of the world, that there could be an overall supply issue as we move through the 2020 marketing year.
Well, what I find very interesting, Casey, is that just on any little slightly bullish news at all, and we've had lots of double-digit gains, and even though it hasn't been able to keep it going, persistently, but we've had a lot of these double-digit gains out of nowhere, showing that this market is kind of nervous. It's very antsy, right, to move higher double digits on a consistent basis, where we haven't been seeing that in the other markets. So I think that's telling you that it's a very nervous market that's very fragile at this point. Any further supply problems that may come along. And so I agree with you. I think this is a market to watch. It could be certainly the leader over the winter months. So,
all right. So another market to watch that we've talked about here a few times, a couple of them actually I want to bring up. One is the sugar market, because of the issue when we start talking about sugar beets and what we see happen, not necessarily just in the U.S., but across the entire world in key sugar beet growing areas. Moreover, in Ukraine, where it's a large sugar beet producing area right now, and as you take a look at what's happened with sugar beets and sugar itself, there's some issues there that are going to cause, like you talked about, are going to cause some issues with the global market. The global market's a little bit different than the other commodities that we see out there. Usually the U.S. is fairly isolated when it comes to its sugar market, as we talked about in the past. But as you take a stop and take a look, and the U.S. starts coming to the table and having to buy some sugar from around the world, there could be a great opportunity for sugar moving into the next 3 or 4 months. We could see a really good movement in sugar as a whole.
I agree. I mean, everywhere I look, we've had problems. We had a problem with the U.S. sugar beet crop. We have problems with the European sugar beet crop. We had some problems with the Russian sugar beet crop. We had the sugar cane crop in India down 15-20%. We had the sugar cane crop in Thailand down 20%, all due to bad weather. And because Brazil continues to push more and more ethanol and less production of sugar cane, their sugar production is down some 30% over the last couple of years, and there's no end in sight to that continued ratio switch. So the International Sugar Organization, ISO, came out and increased their deficit, supply-demand deficit for global sugar supplies this year to 6 to 7 million metric tons, which is the largest deficit since 2015 when the sugar market ran into the 20s. So if you look at a chart, we talked about breaking over 13 would really be a sign of a market building ahead of steam, and we did that this week. I think we closed today at 13.5.
Yep.
This market is higher. It looks really, really good to us that this market has much further to go. So we think the price is finally catching up with the fundamentals.
Yeah, it's there's all kinds of signs out there that jump out at you when it comes to what you see happen in the sugar market. So that's definitely something to pay attention to, and there's good opportunity there to watch those fundamentals move and like you always say, volatility gives you a chance to make some money. And I think that there's a chance.
Yeah, volatility is always your friend. Without any volatility,
okay.
No opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, one last thing, and we'll close it up with this. Let's jump over and talk and take no more. So we see milk, kind of bound milk's doing when you start looking at the fundamentals with milk powder and what's happening in New Zealand and Australia as well. New Zealand and Australia, or New Zealand anyway, pretty much supply the world with class 4 milk powder, what that looks like and how that all plays into the marketplace. And they are struggling right now to make sure things happen the way they're supposed to. So, fragile marketplace, you know, I attention to that and watch that move around just from a forage harvester perspective. We watched the price of milk go from in the low to mid-teens up into the 20s now. And luckily this class 4 thing is kind of really kind of taking that place of what we saw happen in class 3 milk and kind of still keep kind of bringing that up. How long can that last, and what do you think the future for the milk market looks like moving into 2020?
Short term, you know, we're actually a little bearish here. I mean, at some point the market factors weather in, it factors supply problems in. And when we went back and we looked at the three primary years that New Zealand had production problems, and in every single one of those years we topped out by early January and had some kind of a correction into the April, spring time frame. And so we would expect that we would see that kind of a pause, a relief decline after a pretty spirited run. We don't think it's the end of a longer-term bull market in milk, but we do think there's a pricing opportunity here based upon the fact that the market got a little high. There is demand destruction that takes place in dairy when we reach, you know, class 3 prices in the 19 to 20. There is demand destruction that comes. We know U.S. production is going to improve, and we do know that Chinese like to binge buy milk aggregates into the end of the year, and then they back off for a little while. So everything says to us, Casey, that there's probably a dip coming here. Not a major dip. I would say more of a shallow correction, but a correction nonetheless. We've been suggesting that a dairy producer in the U.S. take this opportunity to get some milk price for the first half of the year. You know, we think the profits are pretty good. And we do think there's going to be a pause here. So it's kind of a short-term bearish view. Longer-term, we remain very optimistic that we still have much higher levels to go to. So at this point, we just think it's a time for the pause in the market.
Yeah, that's
well, that was one of those opportunities there where milk was actually going to had a rebound for a minute, and we'll see what happens as things move forward. I'm excited to see what happens there because, like you said, there might be some opportunities and there might be some areas for correction. Like you said, you got to sell sooner or later. So, Sean, good stuff as usual. Folks want to reach out to you and pick your brain or just see what the latest information you have. What's the best place to do?
Our website, Casey, is always best at Hackett, Hackett, advisors.com. Our homepage is filled with information, and so your listeners can to see if what we do and what we put out is worth it to them.
Right on. Well, this is Casey. Our podcast, you can check me out on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, and about anywhere else that you can find a podcast. Also, hit me up on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Ugonine LLC, and also go to the globalagnetwork.com. There you can find information about the Moving Iron podcast and a lot of great other podcasts that are listed out there. And check out their newsletter they have. You can sign up for to get all the latest information about the Moving Iron podcast and other great podcasters that are available. So I guess until next time, Sean, this is Casey Seymour and Sean Hackett. Let's go move some iron. Out.
Moving iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving higher, time and time again. Through the years you'll find a scene.